Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., the program where you get an opportunity to really, really grab hold of some information that lets us know about life. It's ups, it's downs, it's good, it's not so good. Joining us today is an outstanding author, Ms. Stacy Horn, who has written a book entitled Damnation Island, Poor, Sick, Mad, and Criminal in 19th Century New York. Ms. Horn is actually the author of five previous nonfiction books, including Imperfect Harmony. She's been hailed as an author who can combine off-field curiosity with top-flight reporting skills. She has offered commentary on NPR's All Things Considered, and she's founder of the social network Echo, which we're going to be finding out more about later on. But without further ado, the awesome is Stacy Horn. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Truly my pleasure. And Stacy, you know I have to ask you, what prompted you to become an author?
Oh, gosh. I've actually wanted to write books since I was 9 years old. And it was all because another, you know, 9-year-old girl in my class got up in front of the class and read a story that she had written. And I always loved reading, and it just, I never, like, thought about, oh, my God, someone actually writes these things that I love, and what fun that would be to be the writer. And so ever since that day, I've wanted to be a writer.
That's awesome. So what did you start with? What kind of writing did you start with, poems or something else?
I liked writing fiction, but as an adult, I never pursued writing because I thought, well, this is something I would do on the side. I have to find something else, you know, real to make a living. And that's actually, I started the social network Echo, and I was being interviewed by a newspaper, and I forget what question they asked me, but the answer was, I've got an unpublished novel sitting in my desk drawer like every other wannabe writer. And the next day, I got a phone call from a publisher, Warner Books, saying, we'll publish your novel.
Interesting.
I know. They read it, and they said, okay, it's not quite ready for being published, but we love your writing. Would you consider writing about the Internet? Because this is back in the 80s when nobody had really heard of the Internet.
Yes.
And so that's how I got started.
That is awesome. And so when you started out in particular, and it may or may not be the same now, but when you started out writing, did you find that there were certain techniques or strategies that you could use that would really help things flow? Did you find that in the beginning it was hard to get those first few paragraphs, the first few pages down, and then all of a sudden things just started flowing? How did it work for you?
Well, I had always imagined myself as writing fiction, and my first book was actually nonfiction, and I felt instantly in love with nonfiction because I loved beyond expression research. I mean, for me, there is just nothing more fun than digging into and learning about something that's interesting to you. And as far as writing the books, it's never been really a struggle. They almost write themselves just because I'm so obsessed with whatever I'm writing about. And the story, the narrative just arises. I feel like I almost don't do anything. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's not that polishing sentences and things like that are hard, but the structure really becomes clear to me once I know what I'm talking about.
What a gift. I'm glad you discovered that gift too so early on and have pursued it and have truly just benefited a number of people as a result. And I tell you what, this book, Damnation Island, is something that can really open our eyes. And I hope, as we discuss some of the principles that you address in this book, open a lot of people's hearts.
Yeah. I actually, my interest in what I ultimately ended up focusing on in this book began when I was researching a book about the NYPD's Cold Case Squad. And that's a squad that goes back and tries to solve unsolved homicides. And so I spent some time researching, you know, roughly 100 years of unsolved murder in New York. And about the same time that I was doing all this research and spending time with the detectives and learning how murders are solved, there were a bunch of very high-profile white-collar criminals being tried in the courts. I forget their names. Like, it was WorldCom. I forget who else, but they were very big cases. And by that time, I had a sense of how big police departments are across the United States and how successful or not successful they are at solving the crimes that they focus on. And it made me very curious. Like, so we have a very good idea, for instance, of how many murders are committed every year and how many are solved and how many aren't solved and how many people are working on them. And I thought, do we have that same sense about white-collar criminals? Like, do we know how many criminals are out there? Do we know how many crimes are being committed and who's working on them? How many people are actually working on them? How many cases get solved each year? And so I started looking into that, and I found that at the time, and this was, I guess, around 2003 or 4 when I was, you know, calling up the SEC and the Attorney General and the FBI, at that time, nobody could tell me. No one was keeping track of those crimes the way they were keeping track of murder, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it just struck me as unfair and unjust. Not that murder isn't horrible, because it is, but one murderer kills one person, which is, again, terrible. I'm not trying to soften what this is. But someone committing a financial crime can hurt the entire nation, and which might ultimately lead to the deaths of other people due
yes.
to whatever, losing health care, losing their homes, losing their livelihood. And we're not looking at them to the same degree that we are looking at other criminals, and I just thought that wasn't right.
I agree with you 100%. In fact, I remember thinking that same thing some years ago, Stacey, and I know that it when it comes to quote-unquote street crime, it wasn't just murder that they were looking at, but they were looking at armed robberies,
exactly.
car thefts, et cetera. And my thinking was like your thinking. You know, okay, we have a dollar amount. We can put some numbers, some stats to what's happening with this so-called street crime. But when it comes to white-collar crime, what's the story? And I remember watching a documentary some time ago where they had the people who were involved in trying to discover what the dollar amount was of white-collar crime.
Yeah.
They admitted that they went into it assuming that the cost of white-collar crime, the dollars and cents of it, was going to be nowhere near the dollars and cents of street crime, but they still wanted to get an idea of what it would be. And so they started counting up, and thought they'd come to the end of it, and they had not. And at that point, they were still below the dollar amount, the dollar cost of street crime. Long and the short of it, they got to the point where every time they thought they'd come to the end of white-collar crime, they had not. And they had far surpassed the dollar cost of street crime. And eventually, and every time they thought they came to the end of it, they had not. And so finally, they just stopped trying to count it. It was that bad.
Exactly. And because I was researching murder, I was more focused on deaths. And if you like start to count all the deaths due to unsafe work conditions,
mm-hmm.
unsafe products, you know, poorly built products, companies that withhold information about the dangers of their products, like tobacco companies, opioid manufacturers who withheld information about how addictive they were. And if you started counting up all those deaths, I'm sure that they would surpass the deaths that take place as a result of murder.
Wow. You know what? That's an excellent point. And when you start also looking at, as you're mentioning, the people who profit by pushing even stuff like cocaine, crack, et cetera, into neighborhoods. Yeah, I agree with you. I really think that would far surpass what is commonly reported to us. And of course, I guess, did you find that there are any specific reasons that the people who do their research report what they do report and don't report widely what they don't report.
Well, because there, at least at the time when I was looking into that, when I wanted to know, you know, were there statistics that compared with the FBI's uniform crime reports, which tracks, you know, the crimes like murder, robbery, rape, and assault for the United States. I wanted to see if there was any kind of tracking system for white-collar crimes, and there was not at the time. The FBI is now started reporting and tracking white-collar crimes. But again, it's not being investigated to the extent that other crimes are, so it's still not an accurate number.
Yeah. So it may be years before we ever get to that point, if ever. But in the meantime, your love of research also took you back, because apparently you have an interest in historical research and in addition to modern research, what's happening today currently.
I've always been a history nerd. Like, even when I was doing the cold case book, what fascinated me most were the oldest unsolved homicides.
Interesting.
But it was that sensibility when I became aware of, you know, which crimes were being investigated, arrested, and prosecuted with vigor, as opposed to the crimes that were not. It was with that awareness that I went into researching this book, but it wasn't my focus. Like, my whole idea was, I'm going to write about what happened on Black Gulf Island, and I didn't know at the time. I mean, I knew, I grew up in New York, so I had some vague idea that something bad happened there, but I really didn't know. But I am attracted to morbid, dark stories, so I was interested to find out. And what I did find out was the city bought that island in 1828 because at the time, Bellevue, which is now known as a hospital, was also at the time in the early 19th century the place where we had our city lunatic asylum, two penal institutions, and the almshouse for the poor. And because they had all these, you know, departments within this one complex of building, it was very overcrowded and inhumane. And so the city said, okay, we have to do something about this. So they bought Blackwell's Island, which is now known as Roosevelt Island. It's an island in the East River about 2 miles long. And at the time, it was owned by the Blackwell family, and it was a very beautiful island. They had fruit trees, and so it was viewed as a sanctuary. And the city was very well intended at the time. They thought they would build these replacement institutions on the island. They'd be state-of-the-art and humane, and they would be like a beacon of hope and progress for all the rest of the country and the world. So they built a new lunatic asylum, a penitentiary, a workhouse, and that's a penal institution for people convicted of minor crimes. Then, again, another almshouse for the poor, and then various hospitals to serve these populations. But they just, everything just went south almost immediately. I have this quote from Charles Dickens, who visited the asylum 3 years after it went up, and he described it as having that madhouse air. The moping idiot, the gibbering maniac with his hideous laugh and pointed finger, there they all were in naked ugliness and horror. And that was like only 3 years after it opened. And they really did try very hard. Like, they consulted experts. They went down to Philadelphia to visit a lunatic asylum that went up there that was based on this very revolutionary form of treatment called moral treatment. And when you hear it described, it's just like common sense now. But at the time, lunatics were thrown into prison, put in straitjackets, and subjected to bloodletting as a form of treatment. And moral treatment basically just said, let's just treat them with compassion, put them in a nice place, and treat them kindly, and maybe they will heal better that way. And, of course, it worked much better. But
and so, like you said, they truly had good, noble intentions at the outset.
They did.
And when we talk about bloodletting, share with us what that's about.
Well, it's just what it sounds. They would cut the skin and release blood, thinking that they were releasing bad humors or possibly demons, and this was a healing thing.
And isn't that interesting that in the 19th century, we had practitioners who were attempting to relieve people of demons by bloodletting.
Yeah.
And in the 21st century in America, we have a lot of people who deny the existence of demons.
Yeah.
And of course, I know that there are a lot of people who would say otherwise, but we have a lot of people who deny that existence. 19th century, they're trying to relieve people of demons and the problems that the demons would be causing by the bloodletting. And of course, this is a word, you use the word that I know a lot of the people maybe in their 20s may not be that familiar with. Lunatics. What were they talking about when they meant referred to someone as a lunatic?
Lunatic basically referred to anyone that was diagnosed with a mental disorder, and that could include, although they didn't call it at the time, schizophrenia, but anything as simple as just anxiety and depression. If you were having anxiety attacks, that was the kind of thing that would get you committed in the lunatic asylum in the 19th century.
Our guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Ms. Stacy Horn. She is a historian. She is truly, truly a researcher. Her book, her latest book, is entitled Damnation Island, Poor, Sick, Mad, and Criminal in the 19th Century New York. She's sharing with us what her research turned up. And remember, we had some people who had truly good intentions for the poor, the sick, the mad, and the criminal. But something went terribly wrong along the way of helping these people. We're going to find out just how bad it got as Stacy Horn continues her conversation with us. Stay with us. We'll be right back.